10% of the total sum. There's way too much here, for heaven's sake. I'll have to give you her email address, ynlin@xmu.com. Hi, you're on KNYOLP in Fort Bragg. How can I help you? Zeke, you are the Zeke. Why is the... hold on, something is not right here. I'm not getting a phone in. Can you just start talking and let me make sure why this isn't coming in properly. Ah, there we go. Okay, I turned up the wrong channel. You see what happens.
Great.
You see what happens. Now you're working fine. So I have some emails from you, and you sent me a couple of copies of your book. You sent me email copies of your softbound book and your hardbound version of the book, both at the same time.
The book cover of the hardbound version.
Ah, that was it.
Because it had some interesting blurbs in it that the soft cover and ebook don't.
Uh-huh. Well, you told me in email that you had a problem with your teeth and you wouldn't be able to be understood very well, but you sound fine to me.
Well, I said I'll do my best. This is as my teeth deteriorate as of 2 months ago. One of my teeth broke, and it caused the change where I have a lisp.
Ah, okay. I know what that's like. But you're an activist of some kind?
I'm a self-made gay activist of many years. Being on disability for a long time, I wanted to still contribute to society, and I was homeless, but it was a time where I actually had fun. It wasn't this terrible hardship. And I've had homeless friends on and off for years, and I write about them. I give them a voice when they wouldn't have it otherwise. My focus is on LGBT issues, but I cover all other issues, too. All my writing is dedicated to gay issues, with rare exception.
Will you say your website address so that people can go to it if they want to? I'll ask you again at the end of our talk.
Well, sure.
Like now.
Well, we're on the air, right?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Do you want to continue interviewing me? Or
I sure do. I was just asking you to say, I don't remember what it is, and I was hoping that you would say it.
Oh, the webpage?
Yeah.
gay-bible.org. That's the hyphen, gay-bible.org.
Why did you pick that for a title of your website?
Because, when I do stand-up comedy, I chose the name Jehovah's Queer Witness, and a lot of my tales are revisions of things in the Bible. I even have a collection of tales that I got the idea in 1987 called Parables for the 21st Century. I write about what it's like to be gay from spiritual and ethical viewpoints. I have a section on my website called Other Voices, Other Minds, where anyone can contribute anything they want that is a positive nature about the LGBT experience. By positive, I mean if you've had an experience that was being bashed or raped, you can talk about it. I mean, you know, nothing horrible to say about gay people. I exclude no one. You can be atheist, Muslim, whatever.
Well, that's kind of egalitarian of you. You told
me
about...
Well, I'm a universalist.
What? A universalist? I'm not sure I'm familiar with that term. What does that mean?
Oh, it's what Catholic was supposed to mean. I'm spiritual but not religious. And I believe in a creator, a universal mind. Buddhism's been a big influence, especially... one of Buddha's sayings, we have no enemies, only teachers.
What?
And I thought about that. I meditated on that for years, and I got some interesting insights, and I discussed those insights in numerous blog entries, you know, my stories, as well as a lot of my stories are influenced by that. So if we have no enemies, only teachers, what does that mean? Does that mean Trump is just a teacher? He's not a real enemy? What about, and if this is true, there cannot be any exception, so I have to consider what homophobia is about, too. I believe that humanity creates these wars and terrible things as a way of making us grow and learn, the horrible phase of human race will eventually come to an end, but we need to go through what we need to go through, what difficulties, until we get there. So therefore, say the classical worst person in history, Hitler, is also a teacher. He taught us how to bond together and fight, you know, this angel who plays our enemies. And that is, you know, the Buddhist way of seeing things. Well, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, it tells about how when a person dies, they can hear for 20 more minutes. So you're supposed to read passages from the Tibetan Book of the Dead that remind them that you're going to a level, and there may be demons that will appear on that level. Do not give in to your fears. Of course, you might be afraid, but find a way to relax and accept it. They might come at you with knives and threats. And if you control your fear, you go to the next level, and so forth. And I realized, well, isn't what we call life one of those levels? So I use that attitude in my life. Not that I sometimes forget about it, my ego gets caught up in it, and I go through a lot of misery, but I keep the attitude, and it's always shown me that it works. And my life is not easy. But boy, I'm coming out of another painful phase. I hate being depressed. I hate going through this. But Trump, you know, the Trump's election, you know, threw me for a loop and just added more misery on top. But now I've started having some excellent things happen to me. And I thought, there goes the universal mind again, you know. It got me caught up in misery and stuff, and suddenly it showed me, no, you're just learning some things. You wouldn't go through it unless you were supposed to. And I kind of like to think that if we didn't have a history of all this misery and war and crazy stuff, in the future, when we can time travel, we'll have nowhere to go back to have our own adventure. We can be Jesus, we can be Alexander the Great, we can be Hypatia or whatever, and mankind's doing it all to himself or herself.
I see. So when you were...
I get out of the meditating on the phrase, we have no enemies, only teachers. What does that mean? So when I go through a horrible experience of someone threatening me or some other bad thing happening from another person, I take the time to think, what is the message really going on? And it doesn't mean it's okay to let people step all over you. I mean, you might have to be violent back to protect yourself. It doesn't mean you should let people step all over you. But it helps to come out of a crisis more easily than if you didn't have that philosophy.
Okay. So I was just—I've been trying to ask you, when you were little, what kind of family life did you have going on? Did you go to church with your parents, or what was it?
Well, I was raised in a small nuclear family. I just had one sibling, a brother 4 years older than me. I was a very lonely child. I was my family were lower middle class. They were good people, but they didn't get me. I was very smart, and there was no bonding with any. My mother, my father, or my brother.
I don't know what that means. When you say there was no bonding, what does that mean? Nobody touched you?
Oh, well, it was more like we didn't go out and do things and go out camping together, have adventures together. My brother was a jock, and I was a geek type, and I had all kinds of mysterious allergies and problems that the doctors can never figure out. So I had to go to a lot of doctors, visits, a lot of needles, a lot of crap like that. So that didn't help. I didn't like school, you know, I didn't like meat. I was meant to be a vegetarian. I didn't even eat white bread. And the family would say, oh, he's not a bread eater. Keep passing the bowl along. But when I left my family, learned about whole grains and stuff, I love it. I'm still not a big bread eater, but I love good quality breads. When I wouldn't eat meat, I began to get anemic, and the doctor told me, we're going to have to squeeze the juice out of the meat so you get your iron and stuff if you don't learn to eat meat. Well, I learned to eat it, but they didn't know about vegetarianism back then. So I was sort of a black sheep, and always get picked on and stuff, and I wasn't happy. And, I would stop eating for a while, and I realized now, with hindsight, it was a death wish. I didn't want to live. I didn't know it. That's all I knew as a kid. I felt bad. So, and I think this is very typical of the average American family. I think there are a lot of the people I reach out to on the streets have had it much worse. I mean, with violence and, being runaways and so forth. So, with what I've gone through, I'm able to understand and those who are receptive to my ideas, it helps them out. You know, like when they have these anxiety attacks in the streets, it feels, if they don't know they have an anxiety attack from all the stresses,
they think they're dying. It's like dying. I've read about that.
Yeah. A lot of people don't understand that, so they blame the world. They think the world's attacking them and someone's attacking them. If they were receptive to me, I could explain, you are having an anxiety attack. Nobody's out to get you. And when I explain to them, look, when a cop comes up and even acts mean, take a deep breath and be calm. If you can't say something back nice, just don't say anything. Just wait and you'll see things will get better, you know. It's most of the time I can't, no one will listen to my words, but when it does, it really works.
Have you had problems?
I learned a lot of this from Carl Jung and his therapy techniques, which my first psychiatrist I saw, Dr. Gilbert Weissman, turned me on to him. Just reading his books, understanding archetypes. Well, now I have borderline schizophrenia, borderline everything, you know. But society doesn't stand our kind. I think some people who are labeled schizophrenic are actually spiritually or intuitively gifted. And I consider myself a prophet for the gay community, or a gay prophet. And a lot of my tales are about what's going to happen in the future, and some of them have come true. But one need not believe in a spirit world to understand how one could be like a prophet. If you study a particular field long enough, for example, the history of homophobia and the history of gay people, you begin to get a second nature about being able to figure out what's coming down the line.
I understand that. That sounds right. Because you're predicting the future using your brains.
Well, yeah, of course. And I think being that kind of person was something my family didn't know how to deal with. I was just supposed to be a jock like my brother and do all those things. And that didn't appeal to me at all. And there's very little offered in elementary and junior and high for people like me. I grew up on a suburban Long Island. It's very dreary. And I think some of my medical problems were due to fluoride poisoning. And I only figured that out 6 years ago when I read about the symptoms. I said, oh, my God.
Why do you think it's fluoride poisoning?
Well, because I had a very bad face infection, went on for years, and I had it all cut up. It was miserable. It really gave me a terrible inferiority complex. And it even caused facial deformity. I had doctors cut up my face all the time. Terrible touch.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible. But, I see them as my warrior wounds. I'm proud of them. But that was a sign of fluoride poisoning, according to things I've read years and years later.
I see. So,
we were Long Island back then. Fluoride was a big deal, and also all the lawns were full of chemical sprays. And there's one neighbor, the Mirotellos, he couldn't step on their lawn on certain days of the week because it was toxic.
Oh, you mean they overdosed their lawn with pesticides and herbicides and stuff like that?
And that was very typical in the 50s. In suburbia.
They'd go out there and they'd be spraying, and you'd look out the window and they're spraying, and then standing in the middle of the spray, they're spraying.
Yeah. So I was a lonely kid, but I had my visions and my angels, my imaginary playmates, and and they've been with me ever since and given me my story. I get my stories through visions. They can be waking visions or in my dreams, and some of them are really, really fantastic.
And
if nothing else, they give me good ideas to write down.
Well, speaking of which, pick one of the stories that you think that you'd like to tell, and just tell me.
Okay, this one is a piece I wrote in 2002, and it also is in part a parody of the Anderson Valley advertiser. It's called Gay Activism Has Really Turned Queer. from Foster Boodlewhite, Sort Editor, The Mendocino Mosquito. 2. My loyal readers, who are also loyal patriots. Subject: gay activism has really turned queer. I thought the good folks of these gay and activist news groups would enjoy my interjecting my very exasperated feelings about Ezekiel Creighton's dangerous intrusion into national politics due to the absurd ruckus he is able to stir up by his uncanny ability to manipulate the English language. And apparently, that's the only gift he has. He's a one-trick pony. Nonetheless, if this lunatic charms too many people, he can wind up being a dangerous marriage of Svengali and Hitler. And I'm sure you people didn't have that in mind when you cooked up domestic partnership laws. If child guard internet programs could only do one thing, I'd want more than anything else for them to block Mr. Creighton's site from ever reaching, seeing the light of day in the presence of an innocent child's eyes, all of whom we know would grow up straight as an arrow if subversive geeks like Zekers wouldn't amuse themselves by thinking the world is their plaything and that terrorizing people is a fun way of winning a point. And it is one reader's desperate appeal posted below for a massive overhaul of the internet anti-pornography laws that opened my eyes to this menace who claims copyright over the Final Testament, which he believes usurps the previous two testaments. Besides, I thought the Final Testament sources were almost as quizzical as the other two. Who really wrote it remains forever shrouded in the misty past of a few nanoseconds ago, so it's too late to do anything about it. I think we need to start teaching again in the classrooms of every fifth grader across this great nation the dangers of people like Ezekiel, Socrates, Jesus, Buddha, and Rodney Dangerfield. See what happens when you pervert the definition of free speech to accommodate limousine liberal bleeding hearts by embracing gay bonics under the free speech umbrella. From Irate Citizen to The Mendocino Mosquito. Subject: Ezekiel Creighton, militant sodomite, a.k.a. Jehovah's Queer Witness. Dear editor of the Mendo Mosquito, I recently logged onto an interesting, so to speak, website, gay-bible.org, run by some harmless lunatic who makes a whopping big deal that he is gay, only because an unabashedly glamorous Marine once paid him some attention for a short while. Well, his heterophobic ranting scrolls are funny, I must admit. But I'm afraid we're all laughing at you, Ezekiel. Not with you. This one particular rant you unraveled across my monitor really made me wake up and smell the ersatz. Quote, learn how you can prepare for the global civil war, yet still manage to show up fashionably late. Unquote. I hope, after reading my outraged letter, you will seriously consider removing that one especially hurtful screed, when there is so much you can gain by that simple self-censorship. And please, we've all suffered more than enough slippery slope, maniac posturing, idiot conspiracy theorists, including gay gadflies like Tom Keskey, to last us all many, many lifetimes. Well, Ezekiel, you may have intended your smug know-it-all hybrid hippie queer title to be a facetious comment undesirous of an answer. So sure are you of your righteous gay benevolence. But, Ezekiel, I do have an answer, even if you don't want to hear it. And I'm going to shout that answer from every rooftop of my loyal America, or as you so treasonously enjoy calling God's country, America with a K. Through the telegraph, the telephone, the newspaper, and the newfangled radio, I will shout that answer over and over again, until it permeates even that sick skull of yours. So, Mr. Creighton, here is my answer to your snide challenge, and a very terse answer at that. Get shot for treason. Sincerely, a patriot of the Lone Star State, Arnold B. Gassman, professional taxidermist excellente, quote, stuffing and preserving illegal Mexican immigrants is our business, our only business, unquote. And that's that tale.
I see. So that was, how did you get, so you're from Long Island, how did you both end up in San Francisco and somehow get connected with the Anderson Valley Advertiser?
Well, I went to the University of Missouri. I chose, you know, I applied to campuses that were pretty far away from my family so I could just, you know, live my own life. And then I was got exposed to the free speech movement, Vietnam War. I got drafted. I managed to get be a draft dodger. Then I was in a car accident, all this stuff. So my whole life changed around. Met some wonderful people. And then I decided to go west. I was planning to go up Vancouver. I hitchhiked out here. I never got beyond San Francisco. And I was homeless for about, I don't know, 8 months. Then I learned about welfare and stuff like that. So, a lot of people are from travel other areas of California. I did have a friend who used to live in this building, who moved up to Mendocino. He's an artist. His name is Anthony Senna.
Really, your friend is Anthony Senna?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. I don't mean to stop you. Continue.
And in case he's listening, he doesn't know I changed my name. Anthony, this is Gene Catalano saying hi. Eleanor Cooney also knows. It blows mine because we haven't been in touch for years.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I kind of fell in love with Northern California, different parts. And then Eleanor discovered my writing, I don't know how many years ago now. Oh, well, she read this story in 2002, so it must have been around 2000 or so.
Eleanor Cooney, writer of Court of the Lion and the sequel to Lost Horizon and so
yes.
many more books. That's right.
Yes, she's an excellent writer.
I know her very
she
well.
She discovered my essay called Gay Marriage by Any Other Name or Letter to the Pharisees on Alternet and said, wow, you're a really good writer and stuff. Oh, wow, I really like your writing. So we've been in touch, regular touch, you know, ever since. And a lot of my stories come through our email exchanges. She knows how to draw it out in me. And to have the attention of someone else who is also an author is really so much fun. So there is that Mendocino connection. And then when I flew out to D.C. to stand by the side of a gay non-vet who attempted suicide at the wall, Randolph Lewis Taylor, all right, and then I came back after seeing him for 3 weeks. Tom Cahill came down. He heard about me. I was in the news. And he gave me all kinds of support. And he started fast. Randolph did a 40-day fast the year before. The year he shot himself was 85. He fasted for 40 days on behalf of Vietnam veterans.
You're not talking about Tom Cahill. You're talking about the other one.
Yes.
Tom Cahill never, as far as I know, didn't shoot himself. He's living in France now, but you know that. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I don't mean to keep interrupting you. Please continue.
That's cool. So he then started, so Randolph did a 40-day fast to have Vietnam veterans represented at the 1984 SF Democratic Convention. At the last minute, he got it. But then the Democratic Party betrayed him at the next last minute, and well, that's a whole story in itself. It's in my book, some of it. I found out that Tom Cahill had supported him during the fast and even began his own fast out of sympathy. But he began his fast, at least, I think, I don't know when, but around halfway into when Randolph had his fast. And then Randolph ended his fast. Tom continued his fast on behalf of stopping rape in prison. I think his was a 60-day fast, right? And then a year later, he heard about me in the news helping Randolph Cahill after he shot himself, and he gave me tons of support. And Tom Cahill is, you know, his spiritual home is Mendocino County, too. He lived in 10 Mile for, I don't know, about 30 years. So I apparently have some strong spiritual connection with the good folks up in Mendocino.
Yeah, there are a lot of interesting connections there, and it wasn't until, like, last week that I even knew that you existed.
Well, this is interesting because I've done many good things on behalf of the gay community, got my 15 minutes of fame more than once, and yet I'm not incorporated into the gay community. I'm not given any recognition. I'm not. All the years I've been here, I've been here since 73, it's like I may as well have moved here yesterday, you know? And The friends I had all moved or died and haven't been able to make new friends, except among the homeless, but the gay homeless and so forth. And, well, all the counterculture types were, you know, faded away. Where have all the flowers gone? And like every other minority, swung to the right. And it's gotten very rude and mean, and I still contribute to the gay issue in a lot of big ways, but with no recognition. I'm sure there are many other people who are unsung heroes, and I think that the gay community has become way too conservative, and our, the one who are official leaders, I think they're doing it more for the glory of money. Like AIDS is a big money maker, so who wants to have new people volunteer and get recognition? They'll push you aside and start getting the glory and money. And I think that's what's happened. Every minority group swung to the right and pushed out, rejected its counterculture, which is the creative force of the activism. You know, they cut out their own creative force. So in a way, I'm like the last of the Mohegans. But we have no enemies, only teachers, and... So I don't leave it at that. I don't leave it at that. Oh, they're mean, they're selfish and right-wing and stuff. They know about me, and they give me a hard time. And it's testing my mettle to make me a better person. I believe there's a secret society in the gay community that grooms people for leadership without them knowing it. And I bring that up in my book and how it happens. Because I've had numerous unique incidents and adventures.
Yeah, sounds like a gay version of the Lamed Vufniks.
I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, well, it's an old Jewish thing. There are some number of, there are 36 people that they don't even know who they are, but if they didn't do what they kept doing, if they stopped doing it for a little while, then the world would burst apart.
I did read about that some years back. Yes, there is an interesting parallel to that. I guess I have a more modernized version of it. I also think it's shamanic. All religions evolved out of shamanism. And I have the shaman's spirit. And some shamans, their path is meant to be social isolation, being rejected, and so forth. And what are you going to do about it? That is the challenge. The path of sorrow is the path of many Native American shamans. It is the greatest way to learn, and unless you're a masochist, you don't want to go through it. I walk the path of joy as best I can, and I keep getting knocked down. I do my best to get out of it, but it has enabled me to stay in touch with those even worse off than me, such as the homeless and other disenfranchised people. So I understand the process.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I can't help it. You told me that you were on disability, so you're disabled, and you have an apartment, and you're across the street from a coffee place whose Wi-Fi you can use if you stand in the window.
Well, I have an extended USB Wi-Fi connection, but the connection is flaky. Actually, your station has been coming in clearer tonight.
Uh-huh.
But you never know when it will flake out. So
do you how do you do it? Do you tether your phone to your computer?
No, I don't have a cell phone.
Oh.
I hook up a Wi-Fi dongle with just USB connection. It extends the power.
Oh, yeah. And then you can put it out where the signal's the best. Do you know
I don't live in an apartment. I live in just a single room.
If it's possible for you to look something up, look up extending the range of Wi-Fi by using an antenna that you augment by cutting up a tin can with tin snips.
I've done that. It didn't work any better than what I.
Okay. Well, I had heard that it worked, but you're telling me that it didn't. That's too bad. So, but you're disabled, and you're on some kind of government assistance. And your teeth? I'm worried about your teeth. You told me that you've got a broken tooth. How do you get these things fixed when you're in a situation that you're in?
I can't.
So you're just going to wait till you die of old age and never get your teeth fixed?
Apparently that's the way it's going to go, because Medi-Cal is what does dental care, not Medicare. But they want a ridiculously high monthly share of cost of $518 a month. Well, it's a little more now since the Social Security raise. Starting 1989, under Governor Schwarzenegger's watch, they instituted share of costs for Medicaid recipients. And the share of costs is based on your, on the cost of living for that year. The cost of living for that year was $600. So everything over $600 from SSI or Social Security, you have to pay first before Medicaid kicks in on that month. But they haven't raised it since. So now my share of costs is almost half my income. And for the work I need, crowns, bridges, surgery, this, this, I'll be paying $518 a month for at least 4 or 5 months. All right, how am I going to eat? How am I going to pay my rent? I also don't have access to eye checkups to prevent, to spot if I'm getting going blind, like macular degeneration or anything.
Oh, God.
And I am trying to see what I can do about it. The Democratic Party, the leaders, pat themselves on the back about the miraculous success of Medicaid. They don't talk about this. You know, you can talk about the red states not accepting expanded Medicaid and how the people are suffering and so forth, but they don't talk about there's a lot of us who can't afford the Medicaid services. So on paper, I am fully insured for everything. It's accessible, but it's not affordable. And I'm trying to do research, find out how it got to be like this and what I can do about it. Why hasn't the ACLU or other legal organization challenged this issue years ago, right? Why can't I find any support group? Why I don't hear of anybody complaining? So this, like many other things in my life on the shaman's path, is as if I'm all alone in this. Very frustrating. I thought it was a mistake when I got the notice. See, I was off Medicaid for about 12 years because of all the cutbacks that started under Clinton. Eventually, there was no dental care, there was no therapy, and so forth. So I didn't use it. And then when I got the notice that Obamacare, that we have expanded Medicaid now, that Medi-Cal is reinstituting dental, most of dental care services and everything else, I thought, great. So I went down to the office and reapplied. A few months later, they sent me the notice that your monthly share of costs is $518. I thought it was a mistake, so went down there. They didn't explain nothing. Oh, no, see, they put it on the computer. The computer says this is it. I didn't understand, so I got on the web and learned. I even went on to California's own Medicaid site, and they admitted that many people on Medicaid cannot avail themselves of the services they need because the share of costs is way too high. Well, I wrote my first piece called Obamacare Defecates on the Poor. I wrote my piece about that, all right? And then, and I gave a link to verify so people can have it affirmed what my claim is. I wasn't making this up. Well, someone posted me and said, that link is no good. So I said, I don't understand that. I went, and it wasn't. So I went to Medi-Cal's main page, and sure enough, they removed that honest statement, replaced it with a bunch of gobbledygook. So I finally found some other sites that discussed Medi-Cal, and they said the same thing. All right, and I just wrote to a lawyer who is a local celebrity who discusses legal issues for the poor and disenfranchised, including Medicaid. Now, I don't listen to him all the time, but I've never heard him, when he talks about Medicaid, discuss the high share of costs. So how can people take his advice when they can't afford to follow through? Unless you are lucky enough to have a generous family or friends who give you free rent or free food, to cover for them. I just don't see. And this means how many people are going to have, you know, their end years of their life suffer needlessly and die prematurely.
So you started out not healthy, and now you're in your middle 60s?
Yeah, 66.
You've been unhealthy all your life, and so...
When I was a kid, with all these problems, I also had two heart murmurs from rheumatic fever. And then I had a terrible face infection, right? I left my family, stopped seeing doctors, and started clearing up. I either wanted to die or get over and started exercising stuff. But a large part of my life, I've never felt that very well. And also, I've had a lot of people pick on me and all this other stuff. It just goes on and on and on.
A lot of people what? I didn't hear that part.
Oh, pick on me and give me heart, bully me. So I'm not a big guy, whatever.
So you've been beaten, is what you're saying.
Yeah, sometimes, but... But I realize now that that's my shaman's path. It's not. It's nothing I've done wrong. It's nothing other people have done wrong. It's just my path.
No, I think it is something other people have done wrong.
Well, yeah, but I take it to that. To there's one higher level than that. We have no enemies. Only teachers. And what you do, so it becomes a challenge rather than a curse, is what are you going to do about it? How can you turn this around in your favor? And those who have the shaman spirit go through a more difficult life. You've heard that people who are psychically gifted, they have horrible childhoods and things like that. And I'm able to reach out to people who've had it much worse than me on the streets and at least give them a kind word and maybe help them with some Buddhist or Jungian attitude to make things at least a little better for them. But by the way, I don't live in an apartment. I just live in a room. But it is an apartment building. It's an old one, and it has a few single rooms, bathroom down the hallway. I am not in a crummy SRO hotel, thank God.
SRO hotel? I didn't hear that part.
Yeah. I do not live in a crummy SRO hotel.
What is an SRO hotel?
Single residence occupancy.
Oh.
All right. I live in a single room, though. It's in a big apartment building that has three single rooms on each floor. The rest are studios and one- and two-bedroom apartments. So it's not, you know, it's not bad.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking with you again. I mean, you can, as far as I can tell, there's no problem with you participating in my show on any level you want to participate in. Send me pieces that you want me to read, and I'll read them. Pick out the things yourself. I'd rather have you pick the parts of your work that you want me to read than me just skip through and pick things at random.
All right. I have a very hilarious piece, one of the funniest pieces I've ever written, but it is 17 pages long when printed out. Is something that length acceptable?
That'd be fine. It looks like, I think somebody just came in the door, and I think it's likely to be somebody who wants to use the microphone over here. So I'm gonna say goodbye to you, and I'm going to recommend that you send me whatever pieces that you want to send me. If it's too long for me to use, I'll serialize it, and we'll be in contact through email. I'm really happy that you called, and I'm glad to have been able to talk with you. I hope things turn out better for you, but it sounds like you've got it under control.
Yes, definitely. And thank you so much. It is a real honor and a pleasure.
And you pronounce your name Kralin, not Crawlin.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Kralin. It's been a joy to talk with you, and it's been interesting. Look at all this time that passed, and I don't feel bored even slightly. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're flat.